Amy is the director of the medical outreach at the Lung Cancer Alliance, and she manages the Lung Cancer Alliance's network of collaborative relationships with cancer centers, healthcare professionals, and researchers serving those affected by lung cancer. Please join me in welcoming Amy.
Well, I am so excited to be here today to tell you all about a collaborative research study between Lung Cancer Alliance and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center looking at delivery of tobacco use and dependence treatment in lung cancer screening sites. I have no disclosures. No relationships to disclose, that is. So the learning objectives that I'm hoping to cover are to provide background and rationale for integrating tobacco use and dependence treatment into lung cancer screening programs, to describe the organizational priority of tobacco use treatment in current programs as well as current practice patterns. And I'd also like to cover a little bit about what we learned about potential barriers to implementation of tobacco use treatment. So first, to give you a little bit of a background on where we are with lung cancer screening, there have been significant advances in the science, policy, and practice of lung cancer screening just within the last couple of years. In 2012, the NCI released the findings of the National Lung Screening Trial, the NLST, which was a huge trial randomizing over 55,000 people into two study groups, one group receiving low-dose CT scan of the chest annually, and the second group receiving chest x-rays annually. And so they were looking at a very high risk population. The population they were looking at was age 55 to 74 that had a 30-pack year smoking history and were either current smokers or quit within the past 15 years. So this was a pretty high risk population already. The results of that study actually were released in 2011, and they found that there was actually a 20% mortality benefit in the arm that received low-dose CT scans. And that's particularly significant because if you look at the study design, it was actually designed to have one baseline scan and then two additional follow-up scans, yearly follow-up scans, for a total of three scans. And they also actually stopped the study when it hit that 20% mortality benefit. So it's interesting to consider. Obviously, for ethical reasons, they couldn't continue past that 20%, but it would have been interesting to see. The hypothesis is that survival benefit could have actually been even higher. So in December 2013, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, which had previously given lung cancer screening an I for insufficient evidence rating, actually revisited the recommendation, and they gave lung cancer screening a grade B, so a very high grade recommending lung cancer screening. The criteria were a little bit different for the USPSTF recommendation. They actually recommended the same smoking history as the NLST, but they bumped up the upper age range a little bit. So they actually recommended screening from 55 to 80, which was interesting. This is also highly significant in the era of the Affordable Care Act because, as you may be aware, anything that gets an A or a B recommendation from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force automatically is required to be covered as an essential health benefit in insurance plans. So this is a big deal because prior to now, most lung cancer screening has not been covered by health insurance. And so to add to all of that, just last Monday, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services came out with their draft recommendation for lung cancer screening, and they are also recommending coverage for that 55 to 74 age range, so the original NLST. And so that's kind of currently in the works and being finalized. It's open for public comment now, but that would really, you know, cause a lot more access to lung cancer screening in this population. So this is all very exciting. The final recommendation for CMS is due no later than February 10th. So that's a little bit of background on lung cancer screening. But given that, there are a lot of really good arguments for incorporating tobacco use treatment into lung cancer screening programs. First of all, in the NLST, a full 50% of the people who participated in the clinical trial were current smokers at the time of that baseline scan. And we expect that will actually play out in the general population as well. So what we're looking at is a high level of access to current smokers who are coming in for this screening program. It also offers an opportunity, a unique opportunity, to personalize tobacco-related risks in that, you know, when the screening results are reported to the patient, you can kind of tailor those messages. In addition, as part of a screening program, this is not just a one-time test. This is a program. People are going to be expected to come back at a minimum every year. If there are findings, they may have to come back more frequently for follow-up, but they're going to be interfacing to a very high degree or multiple times with healthcare providers. And there is a lot of research indicating that getting that exposure to evidence-based tobacco use treatment counseling and programs really increases quit rates. In addition to this, there is some research that has indicated an increased level of cost effectiveness for the lung cancer screening program when you incorporate tobacco cessation into the program. So this is something that's a hypothesis. It hasn't been tested yet, but it's still a compelling reason to look at incorporating lung cancer or incorporating tobacco use treatment into lung cancer screening. So in addition to all of this rationale, at this point in time, most of the screening recommendations that are out there, screening guidelines that are out there, recommend integration of smoking cessation. And this is a pretty heavy list, as you can tell, of a lot of the societies out there that are recommending this and have acknowledged that smoking cessation really needs to be part of it. So this also includes the Lung Cancer Alliance Screening Centers of Excellence Network, which is a program that we've worked on since about 2012, basically taking a series of best practices, including informed decision-making, best practice protocols for kind of managing radiation exposure and follow-up and things like that, working with a multidisciplinary clinical team to carry out any necessary follow-up from lung cancer screening, incorporating smoking cessation into the program, and timely reporting of results. So what we've done is we've compiled a network of screening centers that have committed to following these practices. And I can actually say I'm in good company up here because UCLA, MD Anderson, and Moffitt are all on our list of screening centers of excellence. So basically, and that's kind of the root of where this study came about, because we have this network that we've been working with for so long in developing relationships with these screening programs, Memorial Sloan Kettering approached us to work on this study with them. So, looking at the methods of the study, basically we wanted to get a better sense of current attitudes and practices and barriers around incorporating smoking cessation into lung cancer screening programs. So, and this is specifically from programs that have, as I mentioned previously, expressed commitment to integrating smoking cessation into their programs. So what we did was we developed a practice-level assessment tool adapted from several other validated surveys and scales. And the final survey we sent out to 152 contacts at screening centers in our network. There was an incentive to respond to the survey. Memorial Sloan Kettering generously donated 3 iPad minis, and we promised for the first 100 respondents that they would go into a lottery to receive one of those minis. We ended up getting 93 people completed the survey for a 61% response rate, which we were actually really happy with. So I'll get into the results a little bit. As you can see from this, hopefully, okay, yeah, it's not too bad when it's projected up on the screen. Most of the respondents were female, non-Hispanic, white, and over half of them identified themselves as patient care or clinician, which really ended up translating into a lot of nurses and physicians filling out this survey. And this has a lot of good information on it as well. So one of the things that we wanted to look at was how long a screening center had been active. And as you can see from this, the majority of the centers had been screening for a brief period of time, 3 years or less, which makes sense considering the NLST came out in 2011. The ones that had been screening for longer than that generally were either either participating in a clinical trial or they were just early adopters of screening. You can also see from this that about a third of the centers in our network have academic affiliations, which is relevant in the conversations around lung cancer screening and where it can be done well. So a full two-thirds of the centers that we work with are truly community-based cancer centers. You can also see that there were a variety of smoking cessation services that were provided at these facilities. Number of patients screened per month, there was definitely a wide variation on this. The average was low, but it really actually ranged from 1 to 68 patients a month. And a lot of our programs end up having low volume, and a lot of that is because of the whole issue with insurance, so we're actually expecting that to change a lot next year. We also looked at payer mix, and so if you see, from the graph, a lot of the people who were coming to these institutions were either Medicare or private commercial insurance, which is obviously going to make a significant change as far as access to screening as all of that kicks in. So, this is some of the interesting stuff. We wanted to look at perceived organizational priority of tobacco use treatment. So we wanted to see how these screening centers really felt about providing tobacco use treatment in the screening setting. And so so this graph shows the mean responses. And so we looked at it on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being not true, and these were statements made by the respondents, to 5 being definitely true. So you can see that they very much agreed with the statements. Staff here think that implementation of strategies to promote tobacco use treatment is important. There's a big push to provide help to all smokers interested in quitting. One of these sites' goals is to integrate best practices for smoking cessation, and smoking cessation treatment is a top priority here. So perceived organizational priority was very high in these centers. You can also see that they very much didn't agree with the statement. Staff here don't really care about providing smoking cessation assistance. So that was refreshing as well, that there's definitely the commitment to incorporating tobacco use treatment into their programs. So in this scale, we're looking at current practices, and so we really assessed. We had a long list of practices that we wanted to find out about, and in this particular scenario, we actually measured it at two different points. So there are patients in these programs coming in for a baseline scan, but then they're coming in for follow-ups as well. So we actually thought it was kind of interesting to see that there was a little bit of a drop between that initial baseline scan and the follow-up scan. So as you can see, again, responses on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being never and 5 being always, you can see that at most of the centers, patients were asked if they were current smokers. Smokers were advised to quit. Smokers were interested, were asked if they were interested in cessation materials. A little less frequently, they were referred to quit lines and to cessation counseling, and even less frequently were prescribed or recommended cessation medications. And that's something that we were also curious to find out a little bit more about, but I'm not going to be presenting that in this presentation. And last but not least, we looked at barriers to providing tobacco use treatment in lung cancer screening programs. So again, on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being fully disagree with the statement, 5 being fully agree, you can see that the biggest barriers that were identified were the perception that patients aren't motivated to quit, that there's patient resistance to advice and treatment, and then a little bit less so, but still strong, lack of time, inadequate reimbursement for providing tobacco use treatment, and lack of staff training in providing tobacco use treatment. So, in summary, what we saw was high perceived organizational priority of tobacco use treatment at lung cancer screening sites, which was really wonderful. But we also saw that tobacco use treatment delivery really varies across lung cancer screening sites. Most patients are asked about smoking status and they're advised to quit if they identify themselves as current smokers, but fewer patients received evidence-based cessation assistance. The leading barriers that were identified included perceived lack of patient motivation, inadequate staff time and training, and inadequate reimbursement. So as far as future research goes, there are a lot of, this research really opens up a lot of different areas for research in the future. One of the things that we do want to do at this point as a project is to disseminate, implement, and evaluate best practices for tobacco use treatment in lung cancer screening sites, seeing this as a very unique setting for providing this, and also seeing that when you're looking at such a wide range of settings, from academic medical centers to small community cancer centers, urban, rural, different populations, that perhaps there isn't a one-size-fits-all, and there may be a way to help work with them to tailor these approaches. So identifying and addressing modifiable patient, provider, and setting-level barriers to really optimize tobacco use treatment and lung cancer screening sites. And as more and more people are coming into these programs, because insurance is now covering it and doctors are now going to start referring patients more and more, this is going to be crucial to ensuring that we're really optimizing these programs as best we can. So thank you.